It's the final edition of the German classic. The latest and last Volkswagen Beetle is taking center stage at this year's LA Auto Show. The car was developed in the 1930s during Hitler's Germany, but also became an icon of Germany's rebirth as a democratic and industrial powerhouse after World War II.
Gold has long been used in health treatments, and medical researchers may have found yet another way to use the precious metal. Researchers at the University of Texas are using gold nanoparticles to treat prostate cancer, which they claim reduces the two most prevalent side effects found in more widely used treatments.
Both sides call it a friendship, but they've been bickering nearly nonstop for months over trade, security, and a host of other differences. Now U.S. President Donald Trump and Chinese President Xi Jinping coming face-to-face this weekend on the sidelines of the G20 in Argentina. Financial markets and the rest of the world watching anxiously, many seeing it as the last best chance to avert an all-out trade war.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Monday. It is December 3rd, and it's 5:10 in the morning. Thanks for being here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day, another business week getting underway. We've put together a really good broadcast for you to come out of the gate this morning. In just a few minutes, we'll bring in our first guest, Carl Allegretti, who's the Chicago Managing Partner at Deloitte. The professional services company will be with us for the first part of our hour today, talking about management and leadership style. A little bit later in the program, Debbie Scott, the founder of Help a Teacher Foundation, will be on with us to talk about exactly that, how you can help a teacher and some of the struggles that teachers have in getting all of their classroom equipment in place. So good broadcast for you. She'll be on at about 5:40 this morning. So first, let's begin with the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Wall Street is rolling into another trading week after a strong close on Friday. The Dow Jones Industrial Average, NASDAQ, and S&P 500 all climbed in the 5% range and were capped by solid Friday gains. This morning, the futures market, futures are looking positive everywhere after some positive news about a potential timeout in the trade war between the United States and China. Dow futures are up nearly 2% this morning. NASDAQ futures are up nearly 2.5%. And S&P futures are up a strong nearly 1.75%. Lots of green in Europe this morning with the FTSE, the DAX, and the CAC all up 2% or more. And in Asia, markets are strong as well with the Nikkei ending the day up about 1%. The Hang Seng and the Shanghai up more than 2.5%, and oil is trading at $53.04 a barrel. A couple of stories before we begin this morning. President Trump telling Congress that they either accept his U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement or there'll be no deal. Trump telling reporters on his trip back from the G20 summit in Argentina Saturday night that Congress will need to ratify this agreement. We all knew that. He intends also to terminate the North American Free Trade Agreement, NAFTA. He's on his way back from G20 after having a sidelines meeting with the president of China, leader of China, over trade issues. And it appears there may be a little bit of a break there, at least a truce of some sort in the works. Marriott is facing two new lawsuits after it announced last week that hackers stole personal and financial details of millions of customers. The hotel chain said Friday that the hack affected guests at the chain's Starwood hotels over the past 4 years. The lawsuits were filed in Maryland and Oregon. The Oregon lawsuit seeking $12.5 billion, around $25 for each of the 50 million users involved in the breach. And Reuters is reporting that Nexstar Media Group, whose stations reach nearly 39% of all U.S. TV households, has reached an agreement to buy Tribune Media for about $4.1 billion. Tribune Media owns WGN Radio and WGN TV here in Chicago. Neither executives from either company commented on the deal. This would make the Texas-based Nexstar the biggest operator of local TV stations in the United States. The agreement reported yesterday by Reuters and then Bloomberg, citing unnamed people familiar with the deal. They said an announcement could come today. We begin front and center this morning with our CEO spotlight, our leadership spotlight this morning. Integrity, teamwork, and relationships are all keys to success for the Chicago managing partner of Deloitte, the professional services network. And Carl Allegretti is here this morning for a conversation about leadership in the C-suite. Carl, good morning. Welcome to the Opening Bell.
Morning, Steve. Great to be here. Happy holidays.
Thank you. Same to you. I'm very excited to have a conversation with you today because you're really, you're the guy. You're in the boardrooms. You're talking to the CEOs. You're the movers and shakers, one of the movers and shakers. Let's begin first by talking, though, about what you do at Deloitte and a little bit about your background.
Sure. Steve, prior to becoming a managing partner, which I serve as now as the managing partner for Deloitte Chicago office, I was the CEO of our U.S. tax practice. I spent 6 years on the road. So let me tell you, after being named the managing partner 2 years ago, I love being in this city. I am home. We are the largest professional services firm in the city of Chicago with 5,000 people strong.
You hit on a couple things there that I bet people can relate to who are listening. Lots of people are on the road. How did you survive? What advice do you have for people who are constantly? Because I think weren't you on the road for almost 45 weeks a year?
I traveled, Steve, 40 to 45 wow. weeks a year. And I think what people don't realize is one of the huge benefits in this city is our transportation, O'Hare and Midway. That pretty much was my home. But I have a strong boss at home, my wife Tammy, that kept me focused on, you need to be home at this point in time. So we just manage my schedule, and I travel just about every week but the holiday weeks.
How do you stay sane personally doing that? Is there a routine that you had while you were on the road that kept you in touch with not only home but kind of centered as well?
Sure, Steve. There's three things in my life. I love doing what I do at Deloitte. It's what I do. I have a great family. I mentioned my wife, Tammy. I have two boys, Joey and Nikki, and I take care of myself. I hit the gym every day. I have not missed a day in the gym in 10 years. So that's my routine. I don't care what the hotel looks like. They better have a nice gym.
If you're listening and the name sounds familiar to you and you're a football fan, it's because you were a defensive lineman, is that?
I was a defensive lineman for Butler University, a small school, and my son just finished up his career at the University of Illinois, Nick Allegretti, playing for Lovey Smith.
Nice. That kind of gives you the routine. That sets your routine,
focus.
Right?
Focus.
All the other things you learn from sports.
You know, I'm a big team guy. And teams win. And when you talk about teams in today's world, I think what I believe in my philosophy in the business world, and it's important in the boardroom, you mentioned it, diverse teams win. You see diverse boardrooms, you see diverse teams. The marketplace expects a diverse team. And it really, diversity from experience, beliefs, culture makes for a stronger team.
Is there enough diversity, though, or could you be doing a better job? Could companies be doing a better job of having diversity?
You know, Steve, we can always be doing a better job. It is a focus of ours. It's a focus of mine personally. And in the world of Deloitte and professional services, we are a developmental culture. It's not about just promoting people. Across the board, it's making sure that we develop our people, develop a diverse team, and give people the opportunity.
How do you do that without getting into complete specifics here? But what's the recipe for that?
So at Deloitte, it's a big development culture. We invested a significant amount of our capital in Deloitte University. Deloitte University is our training facility down in Westlake, Texas, Dallas. So we have a developmental culture. But then our business, and again, I've been in it a long time, 30 years. I've seen a lot of change, Steve. There's two things that haven't changed. I need great clients, and I need great people to serve those clients. And it's developmental programs, training programs like we have at Deloitte University. And it's also one-on-one coaching. I have viewed my role every step of the way coaching. I've had a lot of success, and I attribute my success to my team. The stronger you make your team, whether it's on the field, in the office, boardroom, that's how you're going to win.
Do you consider people who are let's say lower than you on the totem pole at Deloitte as still part of the team, and how do you interact with folks who may not be at your level?
So here, let me come back to your question. No one's lower than me.
Yeah.
Okay. I work in my role. I view it as one of servant leadership. That I work for them. It's my responsibility to make our office strong, to continue to win. And it is my philosophy that I have a title, but it's just my responsibility. My responsibility is one of stewardship to grow this office, to grow this firm for the next generation. I don't look down on anybody, all right? We all work together as a team.
As managing partner, you have to manage other folks who have as much seniority as you, though, right? What are the challenges in doing that?
Influence, my friend. Influence. It's smart people surround themselves with smarter people, and you listen to them. And in my role today, Steve, as a managing partner of Chicago, when I led our U.S. tax practice of 10,000 people, I never viewed myself as a boss. I'm not. If you worked for me, I would take your ideas, your thoughts, and listen to them and see how we can implement them. And that empowers people, and it makes them feel good that if someone's listening to them, you know what? It's not a job to them. They come in and they feel that they're part of a team.
When you look at another firm, another company, where they're having issues, is that generally at the root of it, where they're doing that the wrong way?
You know, it depends on the business, right? Our business is heavily tied towards people, human capital. So it's a developmental culture. You know what? When you have business issues out there, there could be a number of things driving those issues. And I don't care if it's the sports world, the business world. Some of the biggest mistakes have been driven by lack of integrity, right? Making bad. People make mistakes every day. And if my team makes a mistake, you come to me and we fix it together. Never, ever compromise your integrity. And I think the world, the business world, the sports world accepts mistakes. I don't believe they really accept lack of integrity.
And integrity is something that you, at least in my experience, you either have or you don't.
Absolutely.
You can't really build that, or can you?
There's no rating scale in integrity. You either have it or you don't have it. And again, with my team, I tell them all the time, your mistake is my mistake, and we work together to fix it. I tell my two boys at home, if you have a problem, we will fix it together. Never lie, never compromise your integrity. And I think that's critical in this business world. If you're dealing with a client and you make a mistake, you go talk to them and say, you know what, here's what happened, and here's what we will do to fix the problem. And will they be happy? No, but they will respect that you came forward with a solution.
Yeah, I think you can pull so many different examples, too, from the business world of, let's say, a major company having a integrity issue, whether it's something that's developed on social media or something that's happened in the C-suite. And the companies that deal with it transparently and openly and with integrity generally are the ones that come out on top.
Yeah. You go back, Steve, over 10 years, and there was a number of financial scandals that happened in the world. And all of them stem from, probably, I believe, lack of integrity. Businesses are going to have good years and bad years, good quarters, bad quarters, and people accept that. I mean, there may be some short-term implications, but what really hurts an organization, I believe, Steve, is lack of integrity.
Let's switch to the current business climate. Okay. What do you like out there? What do you see that you like, and what do you see that may be something you don't like and something might be concerning you?
Okay, so let's talk about what I'm seeing at Deloitte, what I'm hearing in the boardroom. And there's the big buzzword out there, term disruption. And right away, people go into technology disruption. We can come back to that in a minute, but there's a number of things that can impact, disrupt my organization, WGN, and our clients. And it could be around technology. It could be around the economy, political issues, which we won't get into. and then the regulatory environment. So disruption can be a number of different things. People talk about technology the most, but you know what? Our economy is something that's been going well, running well for a long time.
We've seen the expansion near record pace. We've I mean, the bubble is growing, if you want to look at it that way, can't last forever. Right. But there's really no sign that we're headed for any trouble yet.
Okay. The term bubble makes me nervous.
Right.
And I think it makes everybody nervous. So if you think about it, we are living through the second longest economic recovery in our U.S. history. Right. A year from now, Steve, it'll be the longest. And what I worry about from my organization perspective, we have a lot of young people that have never seen an economic downturn. As a leader, should it happen, is to navigate, help the young people navigate through it and see the long run that we will work our way through it. Because since World War II, there's been 12 global economic downturns. In the U.S., 10. It's a cycle. We work our way through it. You just need to be prepared and watch the economic indicators and listen.
It's interesting because before we came on the air, we were kind of talking a little bit, and you've made a point that I hadn't really thought about a lot, and that is the last time it happened, we also had the financial crisis right. making it worse.
Right.
Hopefully, we won't have another problem making the next downturn worse. What happens if we do, though? Well, what would do you think that would be? If
so, the last economic downturn was the worst downturn since the Great Depression in the U.S. And it was what made it bad was it was a recession coupled with a financial disaster. Do I see that happening? No, but we always have to be cautious, all right? What drove the last economic downturn and the financial crisis was the packaging up of loans, collateralized debt obligations. And there's word that, you know, some of that activity may be happening again. You just have to be cautious. Do I see it? No, but what? Hindsight's 2020, my friend. Yeah. I mean, we could have all looked back in 2008 and said, how could we have not seen this?
And as we all look for possibilities, whether it be another packaging of loans or whatever, there are others that say, hey, it could be something completely from left field right. that we're not even paying attention right. to.
So let's focus on a positive real quick.
Okay.
Our employment is lower than it's been in almost 50 years. So people are working. People are working. And in Chicago, what is great about our city, when you talk about an economic downturn, it's going to impact different parts of the U.S. Differently depending on the industry that drives the local economy. Chicago, right? The melting pot of the U.S. in a lot of different ways from a demographic perspective. But when you take a look at our businesses, there's no one industry or sector that dominates. I mean, the largest sector is 15%, and that's financial services. If you go out to the East Coast or West Coast, East Coast, what dominated that economy back in 2007 and 8? The financial sector. They were hit hard. On the West Coast, you know, you have to watch the tech community, the tech market. So what I love about Chicago from a business perspective, it's a melting pot of mid-sized businesses, large businesses. But it's, let's take a look at it this way. It's like a muni bond fund. We may never have the big ups. We may never have the big downs. It's diverse.
In the news recently is the decision by Amazon to take HQ2 to another city, to another two cities. As we here in Illinois and Chicago kind of come to terms with that, there's a lot of folks saying this is an opportunity to take whatever money we would have invested in Amazon and perhaps invest it locally, that there's ideas and projects, things that are happening here locally that we could put our attention on. Do you agree?
So I totally agree. And you take a look at the process. I've seen the proposal. I believe that this is a great city, all right? And it should be very attractive for other organizations to move to the city of Chicago. And we have a great story to tell. We are a diverse city, right? Vibrant from a business perspective. And what we talked about right from the beginning, Steve, what people should never lose sight of, our transportation, all right? When people have to travel, large organizations, companies, traveling from O'Hare, Midway, it's really easy from a business perspective. So I think there's a lot of things from a financial perspective to invest in this city. And then we have to continue to tell our story.
And then have people hear it as well.
Exactly right.
And that is part of what you do, right? You probably go every time you see somebody, tell them all the good things about Chicago, right?
This is my home.
Yeah.
Right? People ask me where I'm going to retire. It's Chicago, all right? My family's here. I've always been here. We have one issue that we have to continue to deal with in the city of Chicago, and that's the violence issue. And I've been working very closely with different organizations in the city of Chicago, CRED, Arne Duncan, to help from an employer, a leadership perspective in the city of Chicago. And Arne said one of the issues we need to deal with is these individuals in these lower economic parts of town need jobs. I went on a journey with Arne, and I hired one of these individuals.
Yeah, Arnie's a great guy.
Phenomenal.
I love interviewing him, and his ideas are very important, very sound. And along those lines, do you think that corporations and companies, businesses are doing enough to give back to the city and give back to efforts like that?
So our organizations in the city of Chicago are doing an awful lot, all right, from a financial perspective. But on some of the things that Arne is trying to do, it needs to go beyond just financial investment. I think people need to understand what is core behind some of these issues, and it's economic development, it's education, and it's giving individuals a second shot in life. If not, maybe their first time, an opportunity to work in the business world.
Let me ask you about taxes, tax policy. This is going to be the first year that we've seen this new tax law in place. What do you like about that? What is left to do you think?
Tax reform. If you would have asked me, if I'd have been sitting in the studio, Steve, in September of 2017, about 14 months ago, would we have major tax reform in 2017? I would have said, absolutely not. And I would have made any bet you wanted to make that it wasn't going to happen. Why? Because we have not had major tax reform since 1986. And I was around back then. I was a young tax professional. And back then, it took 2 years to enact. Last year, you saw it put together in 7 weeks. So, and just think of that. I mean, our code in the U.S., and I'm not going to make this technical because your listeners probably don't want to hear, but our tax code is very complex. We had an overhaul of it that was drafted in 7 weeks. Now what all of our clients, the boardrooms, want to understand, okay, what was passed, what does it mean, and technical corrections are going to come out, regulations are going to come out on really how to implement tax reform. But again, it's complex.
Companies have been criticized for doing too many buybacks, too much in the way of dividends, that sort of thing, not enough capital expenditures. Is that a fair criticism of businesses?
So it's easy to criticize. And I think you need to understand the spectrum of what some of the companies out across the U.S. have done. Some have had dividend buybacks. Some have had capital investments. Some of them have increased minimum wage and employee compensation, bonuses. So I think you can't just focus on a small sector of organization, but take a look at what was done. And they're going to make the investments over time.
Carl, I want to go back to sort of your philosophy, your leadership style, and maybe leave our listeners as we close the interview today with some ideas about how they could not only set goals for themselves, but to just do better every day in their business life.
So there's five pillars that I've used throughout my career and guided me through each and every leadership role that I've had within the organization. Trust and honesty. I mean, you need to be someone that people trust, and you need to be an honest person. We talked about integrity. Okay, mistakes happen. Never compromise your integrity. Inclusion. I believe there should be an I in team, and that's inclusion, to build strong, diverse teams. It's not only the right thing to do, Steve. It's what the marketplace expects. And the last one is one that I totally believe in. I believe in all of them, but stewardship. My responsibility at Deloitte, any organization I've been with, any board that I sit at, not-for-profit board, is to make the organization better than I inherited it. And if every leader approaches it with that philosophy, I think they're going to leave their organization in very good shape.
Have you, during your career, and again, I don't want to put you on the spot here, but have you had an aha moment? Has there been a day when you've woke up and something is, the light bulb has gone off, and it's something that has changed your life or changed your career trajectory in a big way?
Steve, the answer I'm going to give you may shock you, okay? I've been in business for 36 years, And it changed my whole philosophy on how I deal with my people. In 2006, I was a regional managing partner here at Deloitte. And I told you I have two boys, Joe and Nick. Well, my oldest son was diagnosed with cancer. All right. And good news, he's now 25, just got married. He's here today because of a great institution here in Chicago, Lori Children's. Yeah. Back then it was Children's Memorial. And that changed my life. I always loved what I did. But you know what? When you're sitting in a hospital, and we were on vacation when this happened, that your son's diagnosed with cancer, guess what? I didn't worry about a thing that was going on in the office. So I finish up every speech that I give within our organization, to our clients, from speaking in university. Whatever you do in life, that's what you do. That's not who you are. And with our people, I tell them, you know, I appreciate everything that you do. Work hard here. This is a great opportunity, a great career, but it's what you do. Who you are is your family, your friends, what you stand for in life. And again, I love what I do. Deloitte is a phenomenal organization. It's been a great career. I love my family, and I take care of myself. And we're all going to have bad days. But if you realize that it's in the office, what's really important, Steve, is what happens outside the office.
Carl, we'll leave it there. It's wonderful meeting you. All the best to you and everyone at Deloitte.
It's been great being here.
Carl Allegretti is the Chicago Managing Partner over at Deloitte, the professional services company. We're going to continue our conversation with Carl after the bell and post more of our talk online at WGNradio.com on the opening bell page a little bit later on this morning.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the opening bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us in our Monday edition of the opening bell. If you're a teacher, we don't need to tell you this, but if you're not, perhaps you have teachers in your life, whether or not they are friends or family members, you know they spend a lot of money out of their own pocket on supplies for their classroom, sometimes thousands of dollars. There is a new effort to help teachers to pay for some of those costs. It's called the Help a Teacher Foundation. We're happy to have with us this morning Debbie Scott, who's the founder of Help a Teacher Foundation. Debbie, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell.
Good morning, Steve. Thank you for having me.
Looking forward to our chat as I mentioned, my friends in my life who are teachers, and they spend so much money, in some cases even buying toilet paper for their students. This is a big deal. Teachers already underpaid. How is your foundation helping them out?
Well, what we do is we make it possible for people who care about the situation for teachers and teachers who have needs to connect. What it is it's a Facebook page. It's simply called Help a Teacher. And if any teacher would simply go to Help a Teacher, they will receive instructions. They can message us, or they can go to our webpage, helpateacher.com, and learn how to make a post. And what they do is they just post on Facebook. They post and they tell us a little bit about themselves, where they teach, what grade, and then they give us an Amazon wish list. That Amazon wish list has the things that they need for their classroom. And we post that on Facebook for everybody to see across the country. And then anybody can get on and say, hey, here's a teacher in Chicago. I want to send something to this teacher. And they can go through the Amazon wish list, and in a matter of moments through Amazon, they can send those supplies directly to that teacher.
What a wonderful idea. Where did you come up with this? What motivated you to do this, and how did you come up with this idea?
You know, Steve, it's the strangest thing. It happened after those Florida school shootings, and I was just watching TV and seeing that over and over, and I started thinking about teachers and reached out to a few teachers. And then one night, February 27th, in my living room, I was just thinking about all those teachers, and I just suddenly had a thought, and the thought was make a Facebook page, let teachers post what they need, let anybody fill it, and call it Help a Teacher. I truly believe that thought came to me from God, that he just gave me the idea. I sat right down and made a Facebook page, and I've never made a Facebook page before. And within 2 months, we were in every single state. It grew so quickly. We have a reach right now of 5 million people And it's amazing to me, the privilege of being able to reach out and help all of these teachers. It amazes me how much we've been able to do and the thousands of teachers that we've been able to help. We have giveaways and we try to encourage our teachers and lift them up and just let them know that we appreciate them, that they're valuable. You know, I can't do much about their pay and the problems that we have in that area. But we can all help. We could all send a box of crayons or a box of pencils, and it encourages these teachers so much.
And it's very simple too. You've sort of taken the middleman out of this. Most organizations, they collect the money and then they pass it on to teachers. I know you do part of that as well. But this idea of just going right to Amazon and buying what teachers mm-hmm. need is wonderful.
It is, and it you know, people really enjoy doing it. It's more of a personal way to touch. You get to pick the teacher, and then when the teacher gets the supplies, the teacher posts a picture on Facebook of whatever their gift was. So it's a real personal way to do it. A lot of people hesitate to give money to nonprofits these days. There's been a lot of things in the news about abuse of those funds, and so people are sometimes hesitant to give money that they don't know where it's going or how it's going to be spent. And this is just a beautiful way to reach out and actually touch a teacher. You know, we have teachers in classrooms that are teaching without books, without crayons, without pencils. And unless they buy those things themselves, and not every teacher can afford to do that, then they just simply do without. You know, we wonder in this country why our education is going down. We spend money on buildings and curriculum and we've overlooked the teachers. The teachers are the key to education. They're the key to the success of our educational system. And we need to appreciate these teachers, and we need to help them, because we're going to lose them. We're going to lose our teachers if we don't do something. And this is just a way for every single person to reach out. Everybody can afford to send a box of pencils or a box of crayons. And so it's a really cool way to lift up our teachers and say, you're valuable, and we do care. We want to help.
You have obviously interacted with a lot of teachers since this started. I mentioned the toilet paper example of just one example that I know of that seems sort of odd, and just I can't believe that it happens. But what are some of the stories that you hear from teachers about how significant their efforts are to find supplies and other things for their classrooms?
It's really amazing. One of the things that surprises me is that we were a few months into this, and a teacher posted and told us that children can't learn when they're hungry. And so then we started hearing from more and more teachers. These children come to school and they're hungry. They're not eating at home for one reason or another, and it doesn't really matter what the reason is. If they're not eating, they're not eating. And so these teachers, out of their own money, they're buying snacks and keeping them in their classrooms so that they can feed these kids. It's not, and a lot of the schools have, you know, free breakfast and free lunch, but when they get there Monday morning and they haven't eaten all weekend, they're really hungry, so they get that free breakfast, but they're hungry again quickly. And sometimes the teachers tell me that they believe that the only food that their students are eating are what they get at the schools. And so teachers are spending money on food to actually feed these children.
Debbie, what do you see as, obviously you want to get this going, and it's you'd now say it's in every state. What is the next logical step for an organization like Help a Teacher? What do you just continue to plan on building on this success, or what is in the future for Help a Teacher?
Well, we have the Help a Teacher Foundation, which is a 501(c). We want to build that up. We want to get donations, maybe corporate donations, or people who don't necessarily want to get online and go through Amazon wish lists and send out items, but they want to contribute. So we're hoping to be able to build up this Help a Teacher Foundation so that we can reach out and we can do more. We do giveaways. We do a lot of things, but it's just simply what I can afford to do at this point. And so we'd like to build that up so that we would have access to more funds, so that we could do more giveaways, so that we could be more responsive to the needs of teachers. We'd like to send out food once a month. We'd like to send out, you know, snack packs and things that could help the teachers. We've actually spoken to teachers who have no books. Their libraries have been depleted of books, and books have not been repurchased, and they have zero books. Now, I can't imagine a school without a school library, but it's happening. We hear from a lot of teachers that are trying to build up a classroom library, just so that their students will still have the experience of holding books and reading books. I think that the no books in a school has been the thing that just astounded me the most. I cannot understand teachers that have to teach when there are no books, and yet we know that that's happening.
People can go to the main website, helpateacherfoundation.org. One of the things there is you can donate, make contributions there, but you can also set up recurring donations as well so that you can keep giving.
Yes, sir, absolutely. And we appreciate everything that anyone gives us there. Those funds will be used specifically to help a teacher. We have no overhead costs. We have no buildings. We have no jets. We have nothing like that. Everything that is contributed goes to actually help a teacher.
All right. Debbie, well, congratulations on this, and thank you for helping out. And we're happy to get the word out about this. Again, it's facebook.com. Help a Teacher is the login there, is the call mm-hmm. sign there. And then you can also follow at Help a Teacher 2 on Twitter, and then helpateacherfoundation.org. Anything else people should know?
We're on Instagram, Help a Teacher on Instagram. We welcome all teachers to post wish lists. And we welcome anybody who wants to make a difference. Please come check out the Facebook page. You cannot read these stories from these teachers and not be moved to help.
Debbie, thank you very much, and please come back.
Thank you. Thank you, Steve, for having me.
All right, Debbie Scott, the founder of Help a Teacher Foundation. Again, the website is helpateacherfoundation.org. And on Facebook at Help a Teacher.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures pointing toward a strong open on Wall Street later this morning. Dow futures up nearly 2%. S&P futures up 1.5%. NASDAQ futures up more than 2% this morning. Let's get the latest on agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Steve, there was so much happening over the weekend, I don't know where to begin, but let's first of all focus on Argentina, where the presidents of the United States and China declared a ceasefire in the trade war. President Trump said he will leave tariffs on $200 billion worth of Chinese imports at 10%. At the beginning of the new year, agreeing not to raise them to 25% at this time. He said China will agree to purchase a not yet agreed upon but very substantial amount of agricultural, energy, industrial, and other products from the United States. China has agreed to start purchasing agricultural products from our farmers immediately. So let's see what happens, and let's see what happens in the marketplace today with the agreement on a ceasefire. Also, President Trump said he would notify Congress in, quote, the near future that he will terminate NAFTA as we move on to the new U.S.-Canada-Mexico trade agreement. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You as well. Now, the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk outlook for Monday, December 3rd. Construction spending for October due this morning, and the metric is seen as bouncing back. Building industry analysts forecasting a 0.4% increase after spending was flat August to September's construction spending figures for October out today. Also, the PMI Manufacturing Index, the ISM Manufacturing Index. Fed speakers John Williams and Lael Brainard are due to speak today. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Monday, December 3rd.